the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
So if you're wondering, Fia van den Bogaert is in Portugal and Jessica Bertus has had something come up in North Carolina, which is why we've talked about curry powder with Kadeem Hussein. We've talked about the history of curry powder. We've managed to scotch the rumour that curry powder, or indeed chicken tikka masala, was actually established by the Scottish people. And indeed, we're continuing ever onwards, and we can welcome to the team an ace director, of course, in top form as ever. That's the wonderful Phil Leonis. How are you, Phil?
I am doing okay. Is my audio coming through all right?
Yes, it's coming through perfectly well, Phil. It's coming through seamlessly. Almost as though you're coming from the country that actually gave the world Zoom, as much as other sort of things are concerned from that point of view. So it's a win-win situation. And have you been
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, because you sound to me like you're trying to come from some distant century. I'm getting intermittently words from you. Yes. I mean, this is how bad it was. I feel like I heard you say curry powder over and over again. That's how bad the connection is.
I know, it's strange but true, but yes, that curry powder was indeed mentioned. And Pamela has just contacted us from New York to say that she hasn't had the link. I'm sure I sent her the link, but never mind. The link has now been sent now. And I must admit, Phil showing his wonderful line of "I'm kind of a big deal over there," a T-shirt that he's actually wearing. And it's nice to see that even on radio, he dresses for the occasion. I mean, Tosin, back in the day, the BBC used to actually, even on radio, have a full black tie policy of dressing in dinner jackets and areas from that point of view. Again, I've scrapped that over the years because I just thought, what the hey, it's the 21st century. The black tie and tuxedo for the announcer of the station has to actually just vanish in its own way. It's just a thing, basically.
Yes. Yeah, so, Nigeria was just a type.
Yeah.
It was just a very good time. Casual, wear your shirt, wear your trousers. Just dress smart and casual and you'll be good. That's how it was.
I mean, I might mistake the shirt Tosin's wearing for a Benetton shirt, but I know better than that.
No, it isn't. No. Trust, I checked it out. We're safe.
It is important that that is maintained and addressed from that point of view. Okay, Phil, what's been happening with the awesomely wonderful Dean Haglund and yourself, as indeed the Chilpack Hollywood Hour goes from strength to strength, even though these days, Tosin, back in the early part of the century, I used to occasionally get a name check and various other things, never happens these days. It's almost as though the show is completely separate.
It's cutting room floor material, Alex. We speak of you every week, and then there's just not enough time. During commercial breaks, you know, we have to have something to talk about, so we discuss you. I will share with you something about my long time, 16 years now, broadcasting and podcasting partner that he shared on a little side project we do. No audience has heard this before, and it's safe to say, after it's on the midweek drive, no audience will have heard it. But...
Whoa, that's a cutting line. What? Please.
Not, I mean, curry powder? I mean, really?
You're saying that our listeners aren't discerning enough to actually suss out the fact that there's a need for reimagining Romeo and Juliet and indeed deal with curry powder? I mean, we've been shedding blood for this show.
No. Absolutely you have. I'm saying certainly I have not enhanced your audience in any way, shape, or form. But the story that he told, he just celebrated a birthday, went to Canada, went to his old hometown in Canada for the first time in years. And it was the first opportunity, I believe, since the passing of his father, that there was a big family reunion. And they used the excuse of his birthday to all get together. And while there, they asked him a question, which was, why was Dean the only person specifically named in their father's will several years ago? And why specifically two books given to him? Everything else was just divided evenly. So it's not that everybody was left out. But Dean was the only person mentioned by name and the only person given something specific. And it was two books. And Dean's response was, that he really didn't know. But he began to think, oh, I wonder if those books actually have value. And his siblings told them, no, we've already looked into that. Of course they did. They wanted to find out if, like, Dean was the favorite son and was given the wealthy old books, and they're worth like a couple $100. And but they're in Swedish. They were given to Dean's father, Sven, by his father. And they're just storybooks. But only 150 of them were published. And it turns out there's very good reason to believe that they are the books you need to break all messages sent in code in a Sweden heading into World War One. They're code-breaking books. And, so there's my story for you.
Not simply code-breaking books that can use to actually decode the real meaning of curry powder mentioned several times on the Midweek Drive already.
There is no decoding that. But dare I say, and I'm sure you've already mentioned this, I'm sure Tosin has mentioned this, curry powder, that's a spicy topic to discuss.
Yeah. This is why Kadeem has said
Pamela's here. Thank goodness. Hey, hit the record button. Pamela has arrived.
Ah, the joys of the official build up to all sorts of things, basically. Pamela Suman, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. Are you a curry powder fan?
Thank you for having me. Huh?
Are you a curry powder fan?
Well, I do. I love curry sauce. Yes, I do. I have to admit, I love curry sauce. It's not something you can really get in the States. Not in the way that you can get it, you know, in Scotland and England and Ireland, but yeah, curry
or Lincoln too. Or Nigeria
or Lincoln, with your chick.
I remember one of the first times I went to London and found the food not to be satisfying, and was advised, I think, by our friend Louis
Savvy?
Yeah, to go to Brick Lane. And so I had Indian food, and of course it was fantastic. And I thought, oh, well, so how can this be so good and the rest of the food that I've been having not be so good? And I suddenly realized as I walked back and I attempted to digest that it all had to do with the flavors, with the spices, with the sauces, because the ingredients, and this was the problem I was having, for whatever reason, the year I was there, it just, like, produce and things weren't very good. And but, you know, cooked in that way, prepared in that way, it didn't matter. It was kind of the opposite of growing up with my grandparents, where, you know, they had the philosophical belief that you boiled all flavor out of food. And these were people who cooked the flavor into the food. So, you know, you need to have both in this world.
Absolutely. But as you rightly said, Phil, Pamela Suman is with us. That is the Pamela Suman who originated from Milford, Massachusetts, lives in New York, New York, went to Milford High School, studied music at Berklee College of Music, works at Cosmic Kin Music, does a whole variety of other aspects with respect to that, and indeed has got more new music for the global audience to be released in 2024 on her album, her latest album, of course, Pink Flamingos. Pamela, I've taken all of that information and just given it as like one bowl of infinite goodness from that point of view. Would you like to share with us that exciting news, which is one of the reasons why when you released this news, I said, well, you must come on the Midweek Drive and talk about that. And so here you are.
Here I am eventually. Yes, here I am. Well, thank you, Alex. Thank you for that. And hi. Nice to meet you. So some exciting things have happened. I just signed in a single licensing representation deal, which is kind of like a big question mark. What is that? It's basically, I signed on with a company that will try and find homes for my little babies, for my little musical babies, of which I keep producing more and more children, it seems. And they need a place to go in the world. And I finally came across a company and lovely. It's a lovely family business, and it's a Crashed Music, which is a anyone in Ireland that knows Crashed is a label that's been around since the 70s. And now they're working with artists a lot on sync, because they're working with a lot of film and television and commercials and various platforms that need music. So being that I am like a little crazy writing fairy, I'm always writing new material, they've taken me on as an artist, so that I just send them the songs when I finish them, and we'll see what happens, you know, we'll see where it might end up. But that's really exciting. And then on my own label, Cosmic Kid Music, I'm going to be releasing Pink Flamingos, the album, in 2024. So working away in my laboratory with various talented producers and collaborators and myself to make that a reality for myself as well.
And I'm particularly interested that you have now confirmed on air something which Kathy Mansour actually revealed to me a few weeks ago. And I said, really? Surely? Yes, Kathy Mansour said, Pamela Sue Mann is indeed a fairy. And indeed, that has now been confirmed by your own lips, basically, that you are indeed a songwriting fairy. So, Phil, clearly the truth is out there in more ways than one. Any questions you'd like to put to Pamela, a musical creative genius on the other side of America, East Coast as opposed to West Coast, and still awaiting for that moment where you actually say, yeah, I'll move to East Coast one of these days together with Lily.
Okay, as always, somewhere there was a question buried in the introduction of all that that I think gave me permission to talk to Pamela. But I remember the title of a movie that I made being in the question, and that, of course, frames it beautifully, because I don't know anything about the world except movies. So, Pamela, when I think of sync license, I think of this is, if we want to use a song in a movie or in a show or something, we have to secure the publishing rights, and we have to secure the sync license for that version of the song. And so I see you nodding your head. And one of the things that I love about independent films, or at least certain independent filmmakers who are very clever, is that they realize they can't spend, you know, a lot of money just, you know, getting the 25 favorite songs they've ever had, which sometimes it feels like big budget filmmakers do. So what they do is sometimes they'll go after a song or an artist, and realizing that they've already paid for the publishing rights, they'll then incorporate that theme musically into other parts of the movie, like instrumentally, which makes the song a character in the film. And I always find that very exciting. Now, so have you written music or songs specifically for use in a production or a project?
You know, I have. There's so much in what you said. But pointing to that particular question that you just asked, I have. I've composed some music for film, mostly in the art world, and mostly on piano with some, you know, fairy vocals, if you will. But I have done that. But and Jerry, my husband, has just done that. He's just composed his second film music, a film, an Irish film, that full-length feature coming out this year called Twig. So he's got more experience with that. That's a huge, mega job if you're working on a long feature film. Most of what I've done is just really impressions on the piano and vocals. So if it can be kind of sketchy and like lovely and floaty, but not involved with an entire orchestra or a big fat sound and all these things, I've not done a lot of that. But what I have done is some of my songs that have already been produced have been used in film. There was a Gene Demanian and Woody Allen had a film company. What was it called? Maybe it was called Gene Demanian. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, they did this film called Story of a Bad Boy. It was not a very good film. But it was a coming out film set in the 80s or 90s. religious school between two boys or something like that. Anyway, it was a cute little adorable film, but they had a falling out and subsequently their film company went, but not before they actually paid me a good amount of money to use my song. Now, back in the day when that happened, that was in the 90s, it was far less complicated for independent artists. So in other words, if somebody heard about me, they heard about me through ASCAP, because I belong to ASCAP. And they contacted me directly in a sort of one-stop shop, because I owned my publishing, I owned everything. And they gave me two really nice checks for the use of both of those things, the publishing sync. Now, that kind of money does not happen for someone like me now, in the sense that everything's so very saturated. And were I, you know, an established artist like Stevie Nicks, you know, who had a deal and has the publishing. And
yes, but Pamela, she's dead, basically. Stevie Nicks has passed on. You are much ready to actually work through that process. Yes, I have to break that news. Stevie did go about a year ago, but never mind. You know, obviously she realized that you're on her tail. Carry on, Pamela.
So I was trying to reference someone who was living. This is terrible, Alex.
Kate Bush.
You did reference someone. Pamela, you did reference someone who's living. He's incorrect about that.
Oh good. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was gonna have to leave.
Yeah, Stevie Nicks is still with us. Oh. She still is with us. Though I would say there's no better way to be established than being dead, quite frankly. I think you've established everything at that point in time. There's nothing more to establish. But so please.
I was obviously confused with Christy McVie. Were you not?
Yes, you were. Yes, you were. Okay.
I mean, I've had all kinds of things. One thing, for example, was a feature motion picture that they were out of budget, but they wanted to use my song. So it's like, do they use my song without paying me and get my song out there, or do they pay me? You know, they're using my song and it's great. And I think that a lot of artists who are not established, you know, not world famous, don't have big fat record deals, and you know, didn't get signed back in the day before a certain point, and you know, of a certain time, you know, we just want to get our music out there. But it's not as simple as just getting your music out there. I think it really is a matter of just do what you do, do it a lot, do it all the time, keep doing for many, many years, despite the voices outside that say, why are you doing this? It's ridiculous. Just keep doing it, hone that long enough, become who you are, understand that, and eventually opportunities will come.
And work with creative people. Oh, right. Okay. Like if an opportunity comes, yeah, the money and the deal is one thing. But if the people are creative and, you know, well, this is why I'm doing this in part, is to work with people like this.
None of this would be happening if I weren't working with really, really talented creative people and didn't continue to do that. So I think that it is one avenue that artists can get their music out there. You know, there's no guarantee of anything, but there's no guarantee of anything, you know, do it. So doing it is the one thing. One thing I can say that I'm proud of is that I'm stubborn enough that I didn't ever quit altogether.
You're no Christine McVie. She's a quitter.
She was successful before.
She was, but then she died, and that's also a quitter. Pamela, I had one more follow-up question. Pink Flamingos, of course, when I hear that title, I think of John Waters. So was there any, I mean, you had to think, I mean, even if that wasn't your inspiration, you had to think like dumb people of my age are going to think of the John Waters movie.
You know, these kinds of verbal inspirations come sometimes, like it's almost like a good decision or a bad decision comes, you know, and do you follow it or not, you know? So I had written a song, and then my best friend, who I had consulted because the song kind of came about with her inspiration as a muse, and I said, what should we call this song? And she said, The Flamingos of Neon. And she's an author. She's a fiction writer. So, I mean, it's a beautiful book title, The Flamingos of Neon. So I started thinking, and I'm like, I don't know. And Pink Flamingos was in the chorus, and so I said, Pink Flamingos. And at the same time, these other thoughts, one of them being, Pink Flamingos, John Waters, divine. How perfect. This is divine. You know, so boom. So that became the title of the song.
And that clearly is why Phil Hurdwood actually did the voiceover at the end of Pink Flamingos, which we're about to hear.
That's a little bit Animal First. Yeah. or Vincent Price, so I'm told. I think that was Jerry. Yeah.
And as we said, dancing in a supermarket, whilst a laudable approach, should be taken very seriously, because as you subsequently demonstrated, if you've got the wrong kind of supermarket floor, you can almost break your wrist. So very important.
Yeah, that's not dancing. That's sort of descending.
Tosin, you've been listening to two wonderful creatives on either side of the United States of America. Is this something which resonates with your own particular viewpoint from Nigeria, in Lincoln, and so on? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it does. Especially the discussion about sync music and how it was then and what it is now. Because surely for like Nigerians now, there are a lot of Nigerian artists getting a lot of sync deals from companies in the US. So it's really cool to understand how it works now from our perspective before and after, and how it's going. And another thing that caught my eye was, like, she's in New York in the urban jungle. I wanted to ask, has any of your experience in New York inspired you to make a song? Because a lot of people go to New York and be like, well, I made a song because I'm in New York, or like I've experienced this in New York. So I was going to ask you, has any experience in New York like made you write a song?
I love hearing your voice. You have such a beautiful accent.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I listen to Tosin and I look at Tosin with the hat and with the facial hair. And honestly, I feel like we were twins separated at birth.
No, I just want to be Tosin. Yeah. you know, I don't know. It's like it becomes, I've had a thought for a moment, but a few moments in my life, the thought has come into my mind where I'm like, am I one of those obnoxious people that just want to break into song? Like almost like a musical. They in a musical, they sing everything. They sing their thoughts constantly. Oh, I've got a song, you know, ding. Everything that happens to me in my life, things I view, things like, there's always a little muse in the background going, this would make a great song, you know, and you have to be like, stop. Not everything is a song. Life is not just a song. But I think I'm a cliche because I think that my life is just one continual song. It doesn't matter where I am.
Pamela, I've said for years, the Midweek Drive musical needs to be written, you know, Midweek Drive, the musical.
Yeah, but you know what it is, Alex? It's just like that little pixie fairy. You know, we don't follow the directive. We don't follow the things that we're told to do or suggested to do. It's when that little mischievous sprite comes along and says, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to write an anarchistic song about blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, I have to say, is this really a good idea? I'm not implying that I'm fully schizophrenic, but I really think that, yeah, the muse of creativity just it hits when it hits. It's not always convenient. I'll tell you that. But, you know, I think it's best to say, well, I'll give it a go. Why not? And then see what comes out.
I like that you're not fully schizophrenic. You're partly schizophrenic, which, by the way, would be more schizophrenic. Because sometimes I am and sometimes I'm not. I don't even know when I'm going to be schizophrenic. Yeah, it's so schizophrenic, yeah.
Like schizophrenic meta, sort of.
And coming up for the listener, of course, after Pink Flamingos, we will be speaking to Sam Rooker, who's the chief executive officer of a filmmaker company who are keen on actually dealing with differently enabled people and representation in films. That's from Acrio. So Sam will be joining us. Hopefully Phil is sticking around for us. Likewise, Tosin as well. Pamela, do you have to head off and plan out more wonderful things for New York Real Talk, Resonance Rewind, and indeed Memento Vivere?
No, I mean, I can stick around. I'll honestly tell you why I was a little bit tardy. You know, Jerry swooped down on an airplane last night, not into the apartment, but he actually came home from tour. And in our household, when one person comes or goes, it just upsets the whole ecosystem. So he came home and we haven't seen him for almost 2 months. So I'm really thrilled he's here, but he's doing laundry and you can't even step over the mountains of laundry. Yes, he does.
Pamela, that surely has to be the title of the next Suzanne Vega album, Jerry Leonard's Doing Laundry. I mean, that would actually sort of solve all manner of routines. It'd get Jerry the credit for actually being the essential part of the Suzanne Vega tour. And again, it would also be a nice little line to work on as well. But for now, Pink Flamingos.
I'm on the floor, humbly bowing. See, I've learned. what not to do. Let's keep it here, keep it perfect. Don't even need to kiss you. I've got something better. I wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Let's dance right. Let's dance like pink flamingos do, and I will dance like me, and you will dance like you.
Ah, Pink Flamingos. There we are. We've heard it. It's moving on regardless, just like the midweek drive is continuing to move on regardless. Obviously, we do have regards. We have regard for the team who currently are comprised of Tosin in Lincoln, of course, Phil Linus in Los Angeles, and in New York, it's Pamela Suman. And as you can tell, Pamela, just from the point of view of the link alone, Phil Linus has actually decided to embrace his inner hatter. Just for yourself, for the whole sort of aspect. So, yeah, exactly. It's important. Phil, would you like to describe for the benefit of the listener the hat?
No. I think the listeners have had things too easy for them for too long. I think it's time for them to explain something to us, which is something that someone who wears this hat would say, I think. But I am a man who wears many hats, as we were talking about, both literally and most importantly metaphorically. So I have a creepy story about Pamela if we're stretching right now.
I
while
think
we
that's
wait for
perfectly
another
okay
guest.
I mean we're waiting for our next correspondent to actually join from that point of view. It will be their debut on the whole program, but if Sam is having challenges, vamp away please, Phil.
Well, I had the horrible news delivered upon me that one of my very best friends of all time, who I grew up with, my debate partner in high school, a woman I love dearly, that she died from cancer. leaving two teenage sons behind. And it was asked of me that maybe I could befriend these boys and let them know about their mom, because they had her for too short a period of time and probably never got to know just how funny she was. And so I started to research, and I found one of the boys on Instagram. And who follows this boy but Pamela Sue Mann follows this teenage boy on Instagram. So I reach out to her and I said, how do you know him? Did you know his mother? And it just turns out that Pamela just stalks teenage boys on Instagram. That's all it turns out.
No, wow. I do not stalk teenage boys, but I do have a teenage girl. So sometimes I follow the people. Oh, I can't admit to this.
Oh, yeah. See, it's getting worse. There's no answer. That's the problem when this is how rumors in show business. The rumors, rumors are always true in show business, because the proof that it's not true opens up just Pandora's box. It lets the outside world into things that you don't want them to know about.
I just discovered, though, Phil, I think everyone would be really happy to know this. Pandora's box was not actually a box. It was a jar. Now, I'm sure, Alex, you probably know this, but I have been listening to, I highly recommend it, Stephen Fry reading Stephen Fry's book called Mythos, which is his version of Greek mythology, which, you know what, for anyone that might remotely like Stephen Fry, then you absolutely must get Audible on your smart device and listen to him reading the book he wrote called Mythos. It's hysterical. And I mean, it's filled with so much knowledge that I never had. One of those things was that Pandora did not have a box. She had a jar, but someone put it down that it was a box. Or the
word it was mistranslated. It was mistranslated in the 16th century.
Yeah, so Pandora's jar, but it doesn't really have the same...
Well, only because for 400 years we've been saying it wrong. I mean, that was like, what was it, Halley's Comet? It turns out that we were saying it wrong all that time. But honestly, if you want to protect a jar, where would you put it? You'd put it in a box. It was probably packed and shipped in a box, and that's where the confusion.
And that box, Phil, you know, might have ended up in Kingston upon Hull, where we can actually welcome a debut person to the Midweek Drive. Filmmaker and indeed chief executive officer for a fun filmmaking company that I've been looking at on YouTube and more. Sam Rooker. Sam, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Hi there. Not too bad, Alex. Thank you for having us.
Excellent. Now, on the basis of you were recommended highly by Penny Roberts, which is always good from our point of view, would you like to share with musician Pamela Sue Mann, creative genius Tosin in The Joys of Lincoln, and indeed the director extraordinaire from Los Angeles, and violence prevention officer, and media podcaster, and wearer of the hat with the pink ears, Phil Leonis, would you like to share with us what your company does, how it's awesome, what it's all about?
Is that me go first? Sorry, Alex.
It was, Sam. It was. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. My name's Sam. I run a company called Recreo VR with my colleague, Alex. We provide virtual reality headsets to care homes and care organisations to help try and improve mental well-being and social well-being as well through person-centred virtual experiences. So, yeah, we've been providing headsets to the care sector for around a year and a half. We've through that time worked with lots of different groups and organizations such as Alzheimer's Society to try and help improve people's mental well-being, especially focusing on those with living with dementia.
And that's a really critical aspect, because as we say, why Recreo VR? Experienced staff in running fun and engaging virtual reality sessions in care homes. Again, we hear so much about, obviously, the challenges of Alzheimer's, the despair it can actually connect from that point of view. And this whole notion of virtual reality reminiscence therapy backed by the Alzheimer's Society. Mm. Was that something you'd always intended to move into? Or were you a filmmaker by profession and you thought, let's embrace this new technology and let's actually move into this whole thing of connecting, reconnecting the past with individuals through virtual reality?
Yeah, it was. It kind of I had an experience. My grandmother had dementia, and I actually had the opportunity to take her out with my granddad at one point when she'd been suffering for quite a while. I hadn't heard her speak for about 2 years at this point, but my granddad had convinced the care staff to allow them him to basically take her out, but they couldn't help her get into the car. They were going to turn a blind eye, essentially. So he enlisted me. I was at university at the time, but we got her in the car safely, and we just took her to Hornsey, just up the coast, like a road that she'd been on multiple times. And we were driving along, and she came to life, started talking, and my granddad and me were shocked and looked around, and she was really enjoying herself, having a good time. And I think it was because it was a change of scenery, but it was also a road that she'd been on multiple times. She was in a care home in Hull, and she'd have gone on holiday or for days out at Hornsey regularly. So I think she recognized the road. But so my colleague Alex actually came up with the idea. He has like a software development background, and I sort of had this experience and thought, well, maybe we could potentially do something like that with virtual reality. If we find somewhere that somebody wants to go back to, or some scene that relates to somebody's past, if we took them there virtually, would it have the same effect? And it does. We've had countless experiences with people where they put the headset on and are taken back to or reminded of a memory. And because it's them and this scene, and they're just sat there watching it, it's a really nice place to then sort of explore these stories, life stories, and it's that we're trying to sort of create and provide to care homes, really, that chance to get away.
Pamela.
Thank you. I have a question. So are these sessions monitored? Do they have someone that comes along? So if they've got the headset, do they need to have someone there in case something happens and there's a bad trip or, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we run experience days. So usually we work with the manager of a care home, activities coordinator, lifestyle coordinator, a member of staff that it's their job to do things interesting with residents and keep people active. So we go along and run sessions with them. So there's always two people at least with the person wearing the headset. But we've built the app so. Essentially, the carer or one of our staff can select a video. As soon as they take it away from their eyes, they're in the experience, but it's paused. So you've got as much time as you need to, help the resident put it on. And once they then put it on, they're straight into the experience. So there's no messing around with controllers. It's really easy to use. So, we provide the headsets to care homes, and then train staff at the care homes actually run sessions with the headsets as well.
Absolutely amazing. And are people being able to, can it help? Do you know what I mean? Can it help sort of, I wouldn't like rehabilitate is a tricky word to say, right? Because there's so much we don't know about it.
Yeah.
Have you found that this is the case?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're going through a period of evaluation with, I work with Alzheimer's Society, and I would say around 94% of the people that we've used the headset with as part of this study, 94% of them have enjoyed the experience and have said that they would actually want to do it again. And it's all, so we're obviously going, we're proving the concept, which we've been testing for these last couple of years, that it's a comfortable and enjoyable experience and something that people will have, would like to go back to and do again. But it's then all of the qualitative data of people's experiences, what they say about the experience, the different life stories that they share. And it definitely works as a tool. And we're not trying to rehabilitate in any way. We're just giving somebody, the option to go and spend some time somewhere else, for a couple of minutes. And hopefully then, obviously, people have rich lives and we try and find different experiences that relate to different people's lives and can touch people across the nation, really. But it works as a concept, definitely.
Wow.
a few years ago, I was testing as a beta tester some of the Oculus Rift material and found it quite fascinating. And it also raises the question of what is reality? How does it connect as well? Phil Linus, as a filmmaker, stepping into this area, I mean, that you've talked about the sacred nature of experiencing a shared film before and the sacramental aspect of that. Any thoughts or questions? I'm sure you have many for Sam.
Well, I'm actually been sitting here thinking about this idea of connecting new synapses, because there's so much we don't know about the brain and how music. And so maybe this is a question for both Sam and Pamela and their experiences. But just how often music plays an important therapeutic tool in terms of working with patients who are living with this, just because, and it seems to me that it's because music constantly is allowing us to connect different synapses in our brain.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just I'll go quickly. I mean, I was at a care home this afternoon running a session with some residents, and we've got a video of a string quartet playing Canon in D. And it's mesmerizing because they're all sat in front of you. And this gentleman who I'd not met before was using the headset for the first time. And turns out he was a music professor of music at the University of Hull in a previous life. And he loved it. And it's, and that we've certainly found that experiences with music can also, I mean, they're wonderful to watch. They're lovely to listen to, but they certainly sort of do play a role in people's lives and have done. So it's good to get them out there again, basically.
I would very, very briefly say, because I think I saw a hand over there with the other ball cap wearer.
Yeah, Tosin. I almost yielded to Tosin, and then I thought age before beauty, so.
Or ridiculous hat number one, it comes first. I have found that, and I know it's not just me, music is healing. Music is just healing, full stop. And I think that we sometimes, if you have the opportunity to go out and hear music and you might not even be in the mood to hear it, or you might not be feeling well or something, but you get yourself out there and you go and you hear live music or a musical or a film with great music or something like that. I know from my own experience, it does heal me. It does help me. So I'm sure that music has a profound impact on the people that are listening to it, because a lot of them, maybe the communication is started breaking down, and the ability to verbally communicate and have good memories and have, you know, it's, things are getting confused. So something so direct like music.
I mean, it's, if nothing else, right, just the way music transports you. And you have no way of knowing, like, what memories music, even music you're hearing for the first time, might transport you to, but you love music for that reason. It's not frightening. It's comforting that music transports you. And so if you are struggling with, the way I remember things and the linear nature of memories is not something I can count on anymore, well, here's music, and our experience with music is that can be okay. It can be okay to not experience things linearly all the time.
Yeah.
But I do remember that Tosin had his hand up a long time ago, yes.
Yeah, Sam, amazing thing you're doing is really inspiring. The question I wanted to ask is, those experiences you said that they really love, how do you pick out the experiences? Because I know for some people, what they would like is different from what other people like. And another one is, how many times would, like, if they start using that, how many times would you recommend them to use it in, like, a week or in a month? Is it, like, an everyday usage, every week, like, once in a month kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Well, for the answer to the first question,
yeah,
we very early on realized that we needed to record a lot of our own experiences, purely because sort of the licensing of virtual reality videos is so expensive. We went on recommendations, really. We wanted to give people like an opportunity to go back into the community. So we did a lot of filming in and around us, which paid off massively, because loads of people had been to Bridlington on holiday or had sort of gone to the deep and been around the marina and in Hull and what have you. So That was quite nice. And also, a lot of people that we've started working with early on expressed an interest in wanting to go and see different places around Hull, which was really quite handy. But again, the home in question, before COVID, they used to take people on trips just around following this fish trail around Hull, basically, just seeing the sights. And because everyone's lived their lives there, that worked really well. But we have a range of stuff. So we've started recording previous work environments, things like that, different holiday destinations that people have been to and requested, different hobbies as well. So, you know, things like fishing or gardening, what have you. We've got different experiences for that that people can watch if they were keen gardeners and what have you. And what was the second question? Sorry.
Like, what would you recommend, like, when they start using it a lot? Like, is it like on a weekly basis, daily basis, or like once a month kind of?
Yeah, so a lot of our customers use it weekly. We do run experiences typically once a month in care homes, but we have customers that the activities coordinator in the home walks around with it on their arm, just in the half chance that people would want to interact with it at any point during the day. So lots of people are finding different ways of using it, but I'd say at least once a week for people that have the headset at their home, certainly.
That is absolutely incredible. I mean, I could see that, and I don't know much about this world, this particular world, but I could see that this kind of thing would just be the start of something monumental internationally in terms of the elderly, because people are, I believe, living longer and having compromised situations. And if global warming, the weather's bad outside, or it's really hot and you can't go out and experience things, you know, in the way that you used to be able to provide these kinds of experiences, which can aesthetically inspire and move people and heal people and make them happy. And, you know, their minds are, I think, and maybe you could speak to this. I think what happens with elderly people or people suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia is they stop having opportunities. They stop being inspired. They stop having their brain synapses be inspired.
Yeah.
You know, because they're just sat in a room, and their experiences are limited because it's not safe or because of the situation they're in, and maybe their loved ones can't visit them that much, so on and so forth. This gives them a stimulation for their brain, their hearts, their spirits, their souls. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, and it's a double-edged sword having something like dementia or Alzheimer's. Because you, essentially, as soon as you get to a point where you can't access a lot of what you would sort of regard as normal life, and you have to start living a life with a smaller world, essentially, and especially when you go into a care home, it's difficult. You know, it's a risk potentially for you to go out and whatever, because of different situations, it might not be possible. But your room then becomes, or your room becomes your world. The care home lounge is like a trip out. And yeah, we found that this just gives people that ability to reconnect with those places and go out and enjoy the world and interact with it as they did almost. So that's what we're trying to achieve, essentially.
I mean, to be so young and to be keyed into that is so inspiring. And, you know, you're doing an incredible thing. I mean, you're in, like, you know, you're a young person, you could be out doing this, that, and the other for yourself, you know, and you're focusing on something for people at another stage of their lives. It's incredibly generous of you, and you're doing good in the world. It's really inspiring for so many people, I think, to know. You know?
I appreciate those comments. I mean, it's really rewarding. We started during COVID because people couldn't get out, and then everybody else opened up, and people in care homes still live that same life. They can't get out into the community as readily as they did, and so that problem is still there almost. It's lovely. We have a really good time doing it. It's and we work with loads of really inspiring and wonderful people in the care sector that see something like this and have somebody like me call them up and say, would you like to try virtual reality, and actually have the sort of no, the attitude to say, yeah, okay, let's try that and see it work. It's nice. So yeah.
Sam, you were put in touch with the Midweek Drive team via, of course, Penny Roberts. Penny, who's working very diligently on, obviously, her banking app for more accessibility and lines from that point of view. From your own perspective, I mean, I'm often, and maybe it's the cynic in me, but I'm often sort of struck by there's lots of, as Pamela's rightly said, some really exciting, dynamic projects, of which Recreo Video is, I think, just one of those that emerge, that sometimes they get taken over by the big corporate bodies, the major bodies who say, that's a nice idea, let's just use all that, etc. Have you had any interest from any of the, shall we say, global media players, the Microsofts, the Googles, etc., about saying, you know, we quite fancy doing that? Or is it a case of they're still actually watching and or they're looking to do their own thing? And what would your position be in terms of that? If you got a multi-billion dollar offer to say, would you sell out Recreo today? Or would you consider working with the kind of the smaller market, but nevertheless very important market around North Yorkshire and so on?
Oh, I don't know. We've got a lot to still to do. I think we're very much at the beginning of our journey. If somebody came with a billion-dollar deal, I'm sure we would definitely carry on with what we're doing, because it's just, yeah, we really enjoy it. I think a lot of, there's some competitors, a couple of large companies in America that are doing something similar. I don't see any of the big producers of virtual reality headsets getting involved, because if companies like us exist, then we'll be buying their headsets, and they'll, through that, I guess they'll be sort of involved in that market. But I think certainly virtual reality is, you know, you see it on television all the time. Barriers have been broken down in terms of sort of acceptance, because people see it more and more and have had experiences with their grandkids giving them a go or whatever at Christmas on the Oculus. But I think there's definitely a change in attitude towards technology like this to be more accepting. So I wouldn't be surprised if it is something that they look at in the future, definitely.
And the blurring of the boundaries, of course, between virtual reality sets and artificial intelligence, which is another whole issue for discussion and debate. Phil, back to yourself.
There you go. Well, what I was thinking about with the Alex jumping ahead to the billion-dollar offer immediately was...
If you're going to offer us $1 billion, then let me just say that we will consider.
Well, it seems like to me, if somebody is coming to you, when someone comes to you with that, you know, size of a check, well, then there's probably $2 billion where that was, but also. They might want you. It's not a situation where you're just selling and handing off. They would want you to keep doing what you're doing, keep running your company, and keep doing it. It wouldn't necessarily be something that changes to a dramatic degree, you know, how you go about what you're trying to do.
Of course, yeah. No, that, I completely understand that. Me and Alex both worked for a company before that has recently sold to software development company, but the directors there, I think they had to stay on for 2 years to sort of, you know, I guess sort of steer the ship as it changes over. So yeah,
facilitate the transition is usually the language that tends to be used, really.
There we go. Certainly.
So soon. Would this work in Nigeria? Is it already in existence in Nigeria? Is there a situation in Nigeria where you think, yeah, this might be a workable aspect?
Yeah. I firmly believe it can work in Nigeria, but not in every place in Nigeria. I think it's going to take time before it reaches every aspect of Nigeria. But we'll start with like the major cities like Lagos, Abuja, Ibadan, Port Harcourt, all these cities. You can really work there, especially in the urban areas there. And then from there, you can now go out to other places. But it's a really good idea. And I'd love to see it everywhere. I think it's something that would help a lot of people in care homes all around. And
nice. Thanks.
And Pamela, New York. New York, of course, so good they named it twice, not because you forgot the name the first time around. Sorry, I couldn't resist it. Any thoughts of yourself in terms of the east side of the United States?
We need to get one of those for when we get older. Like, you know, we can kind of, you know, you plug in the virtual reality, Jerry? I think that this is obviously something that is so exciting and could have a place in so many ways everywhere on this globe. I mean, and especially, you know, in New York City, the interesting thing is, you know, you see elderly in New York City and you think, oh my God, how do they do it? But it's actually kind of an amazing life because you're in your neighborhood, you're in your building, you know, a lot of times people, the doorman or whoever lives in the building, they all know each other. And there's this very tiny community, but then there are people that really don't get out much. You know, you don't think about it because it's a vibrant city and young people are out and about, but you think there are people, there are many elderly that live in New York City and the boroughs that hardly get out. And you could see that those that are fortunate enough to have caregivers be able to come to their house. I mean, how unbelievably incredible would it be to have that? And then also, I mean, I know it's a big bureaucratic mess, but to be able to make things available in the various institutions and elderly homes everywhere, you know, those in the city and also those, speaking for New York, you know, in suburbs and also in rural areas, I can see an application for it everywhere. I think that's what's, this is incredibly inspiring because I actually think that all over the globe, there are people, I mean, all elderly and all people with dementia and all people that are challenged in so many ways, especially with their mobility. How phenomenal is it? You know, I mean, this is what art can do, is provide a, you know, another world, another environment that the person, even though they're in this environment, they can step into that by putting headphones on, listening to music or watching a movie, or to absolutely immerse yourself in another world.